Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity is off again today. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, for the most part, crazy and crazy martinis today. And before we get started, we want to let you know that we're sponsored today by Simply Safe Home Security. We'll talk about it a little bit more later. But right now, just jot down the site, simplysafericochet.com. So, Ian, let's start with the first martini. Some will have great excitement at some of these names. Others will have a little bit more reticence. Some might not like them. Who knows? But looks like we have three critical positions that the president-elect, Donald Trump, has officially decided upon. And from what we are seeing, at least two of them have accepted. I'm assuming the third will as well. It was last night that we found out that Donald Trump selected retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn as his national security advisor. That should surprise almost no one. He was a very vocal supporter of Trump throughout the campaign. He's a former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency and was effectively fired by President Obama over extended disagreements there. Kansas Congressman Mike Pompeo, some might remember him from the Select Benghazi Committee. He is Trump's choice to head the CIA. And Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions, the first prominent legislator to get on the Trump train prior to Super Tuesday. He is apparently the choice for attorney general. He is well known for towing the line on immigration, and that might be one of the reasons he endorsed Trump in the first place and one of the reasons Trump wants him as attorney general. So, Ian, when you look at the people who currently hold these positions, namely Susan Rice, national security advisor, John Brennan, director of the CIA, and Loretta Lynch at Justice, you got to think for the most part these are pretty substantial upgrades. I know you've got some reservations about General Flynn, but overall, what's your sense? And feel free to go over them individually as well.
Yeah, overall, it's steps up in each position. Some are larger steps than others. I'll go good to bad. I think Pompeo is an excellent choice. Member of the Intelligence Committee, a man with a strong background in national security. I'm hearing a lot of good things from sort of across the board this morning, people reacting to that pick. That's very encouraging. It's also nice that he tweeted out yesterday how excited he was to, this is before the pick, tweeted out yesterday that he was looking forward or hoping to roll back the Iran deal in the coming years. So, you know, maybe he'll have a little more opportunity to do that or bend the president's ear in the right direction. Sessions, it's an interesting choice. It's not at all unexpected that he was selected. He was Alabama's attorney general before going to the Senate, and so there is some experience there. It's possible he could have sort of a roller coaster of a confirmation process. But overall, it's not a bad choice. What is interesting is that, as you pointed out, Greg, his great purpose in his legislative career has been pushing a more hawkish line on immigration, probably the most hawkish line of anybody in the Congress. And he's been quite successful in stopping at least a lot of lousy legislation, if not really getting anything through. But that's less his fault than just the fact that it's been a Republican in a Democratic administration. But by plucking him out of the Senate, Trump does lose probably his staunchest ally in that chamber and one of the people who was likeliest to craft really strong immigration-related legislation. So it'll be interesting to see if anybody steps up into that vacuum. On Flynn, I know there's split opinion on this, but I'm a serious skeptic on Michael Flynn. He did a very fine thing back in the early part of the Obama administration and sort of alerting them to the deteriorating situation in Afghanistan and was instrumental in getting the Obama administration to take that ongoing war seriously, and that was important work. Unfortunately, I point to a couple different things. One is concerning ties to foreign powers, powers especially that the United States would do well to sort of treat with skepticism or reservation. The most obvious is to Putin's regime in Russia. He's been a regular guest on Russia Today. He said that it's not Kremlin-run, it's not a state media outlet. It is, of course. he was seated right next to Vladimir Putin at the 10th anniversary dinner of RT in the last year or 2 years. That's seriously concerning. Likewise, he's connected to a lobbying firm that is very sympathetic to Erdogan in Turkey. And those are conflicts of interest that ought to be investigated thoroughly before this this appointment goes through. Secondly, he's known for creating a very difficult workplace. A lot of subordinates under him back when he was still in the military were very unfriendly to the way that he operated. Setting aside his more provocative and inflammatory statements on the campaign trail, there are a number of people who've suggested that there could be defections from the national security apparatus if Flynn takes it over. So that's worrisome as well. It's not at all a surprise that, Trump has picked him for something, but I think Republicans need to be very wary before jumping on board with this one. And I wouldn't be surprised if over the next couple days or in the next couple weeks, there's some serious intra-Republican tension as they weigh this pick.
The one thing Trump has going for him and Flynn is that that's not a confirmation pick. He just gets to him to his staff. And
that's
so
right.
I would guess of the three, and only two require Senate confirmation, Sessions will be the one to get more scrutiny. And knowing the left, it's going to be comments he made back in the 80s that are going to dominate the opposition rather than immigration, I have a feeling. He made some comments that apparently denied him a federal judgeship back in the 80s. So we'll see eventually what happens with that pick, but a lot more to come. And whatever you think of Trump, the trolling on Secretary of State has been hilarious, Ian. I don't know if you've enjoyed this as much as I have, but we started with Newt, and then we got to Rudy and Bolton, and then there was Nikki Haley somehow. Now we're over to Mitt Romney and maybe even David Petraeus. I'm probably forgetting a couple of names in there.
Right.
But for all these mainstream media organizations that are getting ready with their hit pieces on the prominent cabinet appointees, he's really making them work overtime here, so it's kind of entertaining in that way as well.
I hope you're right that it's trolling, Greg.
You think people are just throwing names against the wall and seeing what sticks?
I don't know. I think there might be a dartboard at the in the transition team HQ, and they're just throwing arrows, seeing what sticks.
If they are, the darts are made of gold. I can promise you that. All right. We've got two crazies today, and the first one's a double-barreled crazy. It involves Harry Reid and Keith Olbermann with separate exhibits of insanity. Ian, do you have any preference who goes first here? Because it really doesn't matter to me.
Let's go with Harry.
Let's go with Harry because he is the one who's actually been elected to something. He sat down with Chris Hayes of MSNBC. Notice the leading question, but Harry Reid's answer is also quite insane.
Do you view President-elect Trump as someone who you think is going to be a bad president? Or do you view him as a fundamental threat to the Republic?
I hope my first few days of going through the trauma of the election, an election where Hillary Clinton got 2 million more votes than he did, and I understand the electoral system, a system where she lost four states by less than 100,000 votes combined. It took me a while to accept that the next 24 hours after the election, but then I was concerned, is the world going to be destroyed? I mean, he's talked openly about getting rid of the Iran nuclear agreement, getting rid of our NATO allies or making them pay more, the same with Japan, who I understand he's meeting with soon, without any preparation whatsoever. So I spent a day or two worried about, is the world going to be blown up?
He spent a day or two worrying if the world was going to blow up. Ian, let's before we get to Olbermann, let's assess this one for just a little bit. first of all, his facts are completely wrong. Hillary Clinton, at this point, has not won by 2 million votes. It's a little over a million. There are some still to be counted. And who knows? She might get there. But who cares? The electoral vote's what matters. And then he said that Trump won four states combined by less than 100,000 votes. That is also not true. He won Wisconsin by 27,000. Michigan has still not officially been called. He's up by about 13,000 there, so that gets you to 40. Pennsylvania, he won by about 70,000 votes. So that would be a little bit north of 100,000 for the three of those. And then I don't know whether you want to go to Florida or North Carolina. Both of those well over 100,000 all by themselves. So Harry Reid's math, not good, but he's a liar. And so we come to expect that from him. But what do you make of Harry Reid fretting and not only trying to delegitimize the Electoral College to some extent, but actually worrying for days. This is the top Democrat in the Senate, thankfully not for long, worrying that the world's going to blow up.
There are several things to say. And also, I was wondering, Greg, if you were going to be, you know, surprised that Harry Reid might be being deceptive or unreliable. I can't possibly imagine. I mean, there's so many things to say. One of the first, I love the question that leads into that. It's basically, so is Trump Stalin or is he Hitler? And what do you, you know, this sort of have you stopped beating your wife type of question. Two things are really interesting. One is the apocalyptic rhetoric is just ridiculous. Harry Reid, I know he's a loathsome political creature, but this idea that, you know, the Iran deal is what's holding world order in place is just nuts. And of course, you know, the apocalyptic, when apocalyptic rhetoric comes from the top down, no wonder you have people rioting in the streets. Secondly, it's interesting to me, and I hadn't thought about it until listening again to it right then, that Reid talks about his reaction to the election in the same terms as all of these college campus left-wing snowflakes. The trauma of the election, this idea that there's like this great psychological wound that's involved in losing a political race. There's so much less diversity on the left, even in just the way that they talk. You know, all of this sort of psychologizing of political events, it exists right from the top of the party.
All right, let's move on to First Crazy Part 2. This is Keith Olbermann. He, of course, from originally ESPN, then Fox Sports, then MSNBC, then Current, then ESPN again, and now he's apparently doing some commentary for GQ. The guy has some trouble with his temper and saying things, so it's a little tough for him to hold down a job. But he's worried about the 2 to 3 million people that Donald Trump has promised to deport. I believe the vast majority of them being criminals, but he doesn't actually mention that part. Here's what he did say.
That man, elected by a minority of voters, says he will immediately incarcerate or deport 2 to 3 million undocumented Americans, which is roughly the same number of people who live in Houston, Texas. Which is roughly the same number of people who are already in all of the federal prisons and all the state prisons and all the county jails and all the city jails and all the ICE detention facilities and all the Navy brigs and all the Army stockades and all the military disciplinary barracks, all of them combined, which leaves no inference possible except that he somehow means to take 2 to 3 million people off our streets and keep them somewhere until they can be jailed or deported. And that we again have to pretend that this somewhere for a population roughly the same size as all the prisoners in all the jails in this country right now, we have to pretend that this will not involve concentration camps.
Ian, it's good to know that the mental health is well on the left and that they are not overreacting to this election and not worrying about things that are just completely outlandish. 2 to 3 million people. We talked about this yesterday with the mayors in the sanctuary cities. If the liberals are trying to find an upper hand on Republicans heading into the new presidency and the new Congress and the next election cycle, defending criminals who shouldn't be here in the first place doesn't seem like the smartest strategy.
No, it's definitely not. And you're probably not going to win over that many of the types of people you need to win over, you know, those white working class voters that the left basically decided were morally regressive and not worth trying to win. By claiming that the guy they voted for is actually trying to install concentration camps. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm particularly surprised that Keith Olbermann is way in over his head here, but let's everybody take a deep, deep breath and actually wait for Donald Trump to do something. This is the most left-wing presidential nominee that the Republicans have ever gone with. This notion, and Van Jones has said the same thing on CNN early this week or last week, you know, we should be fearing internment camps and the rest. I don't like the guy either, but we're not going to have Birkenau outside of Detroit. Let's just everybody take a breath.
Oh, if you are worried about concentration camps, the world blowing up, whatever else Harry Reid and Keith Olbermann and these crazy people on the left are talking about, it might be a good time to think about your home security. Not that blowing up the world's going to help you protect your home that much, but you could at least do everything you can to make sure that those things don't compromise your home security. Do you ever find yourself almost all the way to work, or maybe you're out with your family and friends, and you get that nagging feeling Did I close the window? Did I lock that door? I drive my wife crazy with that because we'll leave the house after like 2 minutes and say, did I remember to lock the door? And she'll say, yes, you locked the door. But if she's not with me, I could wonder. You just don't know. It can drive you nuts. So you don't have to worry about that when you've got SimpliSafe home security at your place. It's a nice extra layer of protection to know that SimpliSafe is there.
SimpliSafe has an arsenal of sensors to protect your entire home and keep your family safe. SimpliSafe got rid of everything that makes most home security such a pain. There are no long-term contracts and no hidden fees. It's just $14.99 a month. That's three times less than what other companies charge.
And now some new big news from SimpliSafe. They've just released their brand new high-definition security camera. So this camera is different than the others. It connects to your security system and sends your smartphone a video the second anything happens at your home. You can see everything that's going on, so you don't have to wonder anymore about what's going on at your house when you're not there. So check out the new camera today. Check it out at SimpliSafeRicochet.com right now, SimpliSafeRicochet.com. And Ian, as we close out the week, and you're so good to sub for Jim all week long, we decided to end with a fun dose of crazy, and it's fun because it doesn't affect us. This is courtesy of Heat Street. A feminist strategy for clearing the roads of snow in Stockholm ended in failure as the city ground to a halt in recent days. A new system, suggested by progressive politicians in the Swedish city, tore up tried and tested snowplow routes and diverted them to areas said to be used more by women. But the inevitable consequence was that other spaces, like main roads, were clogged up for longer and it became impossible to get around. Public transport failed. Traffic piled up and injuries requiring a hospital visit reportedly spiked. The disaster struck despite a $270,000 increase in this year's snow removal budget meant to help the new system succeed. The gender equal strategy, in snow plowing, mind you, came in last year after politicians in the Swedish Green Party argued that the old way of clearing major roads in central areas favors men who are more likely to work in the city and get there by car. Instead, the plows were sent to clear out sidewalks and cycle paths on the basis that women walk and bike often. They also focused on areas like kindergartens, where children and parents visit in the morning. Unfortunately, the theory did little to save Stockholm when a bumper snowfall hit at the end of last week. Indeed, almost a week later, buses are still struggling to run, and some 1,700 public transport passengers are planning to sue. Progressive politicians have gone on the defensive with the MP who suggested it, claiming that the snowplows had not executed the gender equal plan properly. So, Ian, it's always the same with the left. It's not that it failed. It's just that we didn't do it the right way, kind of like communism. All these other countries that tried it just haven't done it exactly. If you tried it in the purest form, I'm sure it would work just dandy. Ian, first of all, I had no idea that there was a sexist way of snowplowing, but it's good to know. That Sweden had to do the experiment and not us. So hopefully our snowplows will still be have a sane plan this winter.
I mean, I do live in Bill de Blasio's New York, so who knows? But I'm just, there's not much to say about this. I really am just glad that we finally exposed the infamous snowplow patriarchy. I'll sleep better tonight. I will.
Well, you can sleep better after a busy week, not only basically running the show while everybody else was out sunning themselves from National Review, no offense intended to those who were doing so, but even doing extra duty on the three martini lunch. So, Ian, your rest this weekend, assuming you get some, is well-deserved, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure, Greg. Enjoy your weekend.
You too, sir. Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity, who will be back on Monday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. And don't forget our sponsor, SimpliSafe Home Security. Learn more at SimpliSafeRicochet.com right now. Join us on Monday for the next Three Martini Lunch.